This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
I'd like to thank first the organizers of this wonderful meeting for inviting me, and I also would like to thank my chief who stayed back to send me here so that I can be a little bit warmer. He's having a little thought for the African guy in his group to skip from the winter in Wisconsin and get some sunshine down here. So I have no conflict, except for my conflict is no conflict coming here to enjoy the weather. My task today, as you see in the program, is, again, something that would take a day. And I try to have an outline and talk that probably will center around few of the items that on historic perspectives and recent results, as well as ongoing trials, and maybe one slide on carotid stenting. And if we have time, I just wanted to also show or go over a case. So let's start first with the polling the audience with two questions. Which of the following describes randomized clinical trial data on carotid artery stenting and carotid endarterectomy for patients with asymptomatic carotid stenosis? Number one, large trials show that CEA is better. Number two, large trials show that CEA and CAS have similar outcomes. Number three, large trials show that CAS is better. Number four, few trials have been reported showing similar outcomes. Number five, few trials have been reported showing CEA is better. Okay, so we'll see what the end would show. The second question I have for you is, which of the following is not a risk factor for stroke with carotid artery stenting? Smaller versus large filter pores, symptomatic versus asymptomatic carotid stenosis, beginning investigators, so basically experience, or octogenarians, so young versus older patients. Looks like that one was a lot more clearer. So what is clear for those of you doing carotid stenting or those of you reading about carotid stenting, it is really a moving target. So moving target over a long period of time for a couple of reasons. Number one, device changes. There are a lot of different devices that get refined, and the filter devices also become more and more sophisticated. If you look into the studies, sometimes the symptom status is also confusing. Enrollment criteria, both in terms of what kind of patients are enrolled as well as what kind of interventionalists are we talking about, are different, so it's very difficult to compare. Investigators' experiences, now we know it matters. However, a lot of times it can also become very strict, limiting the generalizability of the studies. There are some studies where embolic protection devices have not been used or partially been used, and so on and so forth. So basically, there are so many studies and trials, and the trials themselves make it difficult to compare one another in a good way. And I think an ongoing basis, though, in general, we should all be part of trials that are happening, because it looks like when you look at the results overall, we cannot deny that we are doing much better work now than 10 years ago. Looking at the few very important surgical landmarks in terms of randomized clinical trials is really important to get us going, because everything is measured back to that same data. And this has been also our guiding principle in terms of how we practice vascular surgery in terms of treating carotid endarterectomies or carotid disease in general. So there are symptomatic trials as well as asymptomatic trials, which I don't need to belabor on this too much, as all of you have at some point gone through this. But clearly what was lacking is that both groups have excluded high-risk patients And we don't know what would happen if all the current medical therapies are implemented, and is it going to be the same, not the same, you know, with all the ACE inhibitors and so on and so forth. In the asymptomatic, the same thing, great results in studies. And all this has culminated in this guiding principles approved by societies. So we know we have level A evidence in terms of how we practice carotid endarterectomy. However, as you heard from a previous speaker, the best we have for carotid stenting is probably a level 2B. Now, when we talk about carotid stents, we can see, again, there are carotid stent trials done for symptomatic, and then for asymptomatic, there are some trials that have combined both in their patient population. This is one of the earliest reports out of Duke, where at 1 year, clearly the carotid stent did not do as well as carotid endarterectomy, and the trial was stopped before getting to it is 700 patient subjects that were going to be enrolled. You can say this was a larger catheter system, there were no embolic protection devices, and so on and so forth, but over time, clearly things have changed and improved. The CAVITAS study is the only, actually, study I know of that has looked into restenosis after interventions. That was really the primary endpoint for this study. It enrolled primarily in over 50 sites, I think, and was reported back in 2001 on Lancet. And in this study, 88% of the patients were symptomatic and the rest were asymptomatic. About 75% of the patients did get only angioplasty and no stenting. And there was no protection device. This study at the end concluded that patients who were not stented had a much higher incidence of restenosis, both at 1 year as well as at 5 years. However, outcomes such as stroke and death were similar in both groups. So the lesson from this study was really, when we do angioplasties in the carotid territory, stents are important. However, probably over time, it might have added also to the data where we know now that embolic protection devices can also be very useful. The highly expected CREST trial, again, just for sake of time, I'm not going to really spend too much time, but just to highlight for you a few things. This study was conducted in 117 centers, 109 in the U.S., and the rest were in Canada. There was 2,500 patients enrolled, and 43% were asymptomatic patients. The follow-up period of it was over 4 years, and as you all know by now, there is really no difference in the primary endpoints that combines basically stroke, death, MI, and at 4 years, actually, ipsilateral stroke also. Something that's interesting is this curve which you see. That was really from the earlier report on the lead-in cases for CREST trial, where at some point there was this astronomical increase in incidence of stroke in patients who are elderly or over 80 years old. And that was really a point of caution. And it looked like that actually persisted in this trial to a certain degree, where the authors report that carotid stenting seems to actually favor more younger population than older population in terms of stroke. However, when you see carotid endarterectomy, it was associated with a higher mortality. This is also the only study that has done the SF36 surveys, and it shows that the quality of life, actually, at 1 year and beyond in patients who ended up with stroke was worse, and patients had more incidence of stroke with carotid stenting than carotid endarterectomy. So did we answer the question? Definitely one is greater than or better than the other? No. And that's probably why we are going to have the $25 million question with CREST-2. There are some other trials that were done in Europe, the symptomatic carotid trials. The French trial actually looked into 527 patients. They also stopped earlier, actually, their trial because there was definitely a lot more stroke and death in the stenting group. In this patient population, they did not look into MI, so there is concern about, why did we leave MI part out of this equation? And also, there was also concerns about the 10% or more patients who did not have embolic protection device and therefore potentially having a higher incidence of strokes. The ICSS study, which has a lot more patients, about 1,700 patients, has also shown that there is indeed a lot more stroke, death, or MI in this subset of symptomatic patients. And interestingly, this is also a study that looked at MRIs and diffusion-weighted imaging, and they have seen that in patients who had stents, there was three times more incidence of lesions in the brain. So at some point, that brings into the question, are these filters really protecting these cases? So registry-wise, there is a lot of them, and I'm not going to go through this, but what I think I wanted to really people to take a message here is that over the years, you can see how all stroke cases are coming down. And I think this is really an important message that tells us we as vascular surgeons need to be involved in all aspects of carotid stenting because at some point it's going to be there. There are specific trials such as the EPIC study that has shown, again, the 30-day composite primary endpoints as low as 3%. This is a Boston Scientific study where all different kind of stents were allowed to be used. So kind of trying to mimic, so to say, a real-world activity. The PROTECT trial, again, I just go a little bit quicker here because of the time constraints, the same. You can see all stroke and death at about 2.2%. The Embolden that used carotid filter in association with any FDA-approved stent system also enrolled about 250 patients in about 40 sites, and this was completed with outcomes that are actually excellent. And you can see the death rate was about 0.8%, stroke rate 2.8%, and even in octogenarians, it was relatively low. So this really ended up demonstrating the compatibility with any FDA-approved stent system. Act 1, which we all have been waiting for to answer our questions in terms of stents in asymptomatic patients, as you know, has been ongoing, it has now been closed to enrollment. And the interesting aspects are really outlined in this couple of slides here. Number one, this study was a very stringent in terms of selection of the patients as well as selection of interventionalists. So that is probably going to be one of the challenges later on in terms of translating the results into the real world because the selection criteria is really, really strict. Here is the patient's demographics, and from the leading patient population, this is the result. You can see it is really an outstanding result. Even going further into a year, looks like, you know, carotid stent is something we really need to think about including in our practice. There are a few new trials. SPACE 2 is basically a continuation of SPACE 3. What they are trying to do is they are going to have three arms to include also conservative or what we call best medical therapy. And they are going to look up to 5 years. All the carotid stenting as well as the endarterectomy group are also going to be given the best current optimal medical therapy, which means the antiplatelets, the anti-lipids, and so on and so forth. There is the same endpoints as before. The rate of stroke and ischemic as well as hemorrhagic are going to be included, and all causes of death are going to be included within 30 days. Going further out, they are going to look specifically also into ipsilateral strokes. This is a very interesting study or trial. It's called the Rochester trial. Basically, if you remember, there is a flow reversal system that is percutaneous, and this is a flow reversal system directly through a neck axis. It is similar to the other two trials that have been occurred, and one is occurring in Europe. The PROOF trial, which is in Germany, where they have reported on 65 patients, and there was no event at 30 days. This trial is looking at multi-center in the U.S. It is going to be asymptomatic and symptomatic patients with carotid stenosis who are actually high risk for surgery. And the primary endpoints are the same, stroke, MI, and death. So you can see from this picture, basically, small transverse incision under local anesthesia, and the system gets introduced into the common carotid artery. There is a flow reversal initiated with the other catheter accessing the common femoral vein in the groin, and the two are connected by filter. And there is an active, basically, reversal of the flow that's going to occur with the system. So it basically is going to be initiated prior to crossing the lesion at all. The results of the Rochester trial are going to be added onto the PROOF and the LOTUS trial to come up with one end result. There is also the asymptomatic carotid stage trial that is going to happen. This is designed to kind of integrate what happens in the real life in the healthcare systems using approved devices and having, again, embolic protection device as an option. This is going to be probably one of the largest studies that is going to happen. The study has already begun. There was a preliminary report on 986 patients that has shown less than 1% event rates at 1 in 6 months. So it is, again, another large study in Europe that may have some implications. So when we look at the overall, carotid stenting, I don't think the question is it going to be here to stay? It is here to stay, but it's important to identify and be careful as usual about the risk factors. And some of the risk factors are listed here. And this is just a case that illustrates what I had as a challenge early on in my experience, a type 3 arch with a very tight preocclusive lesion. And by the time I got to the common carotid artery with my sheath, there was no more internal carotid artery to be seen. So what has happened there was actually everything has shifted because of tortuosity, and it was a pseudo-occlusion. Of course, I came out because I couldn't see anything, and the next day CT angio showed it was still patent, and subsequently end up doing a cut down the carotid and fixing it. So I think there is a lot to learn with experience, and I think some of the factors that are really high risk are critical to keep in mind before we do anything about carotid stenting. The SVS is very involved in carotid stenting, and this recent survey shows that a lot of vascular surgeons are indeed involved in stenting. At least their practices, more than 75% of the time, there is carotid stenting offered. And they have also guidelines about anatomic and high-risk criteria. Well, in terms of CMS, this is my last slide. There isn't really a lot of changes. Number one, we have to use basically embolic protection device with a stent. The only time it's going to be okay to treat this patient if they are high risk, high grade stenosis, symptomatic. I think that's probably the only one, but the rest, unless they are either enrolled in a post-marketing study or in some kind of an IDE, there is really no reimbursement. And I think this editorial note from Circulation tells it all. It says, Cash-22, carotid stenting is safe and effective. FDA says that. However, is it still reasonable and necessary? That's CMS asking. So thank you, and go Badgers.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.